Hey everybody, we start this in a completely different genre today. We are talking about 13 Going on 30, which is a charming kind of fantasy Disney movie, which was completely outside my wheelhouse, which is why I'm glad we did it. It's funny, it's light, it's Jennifer Garner. I'm looking forward for you guys hearing our little episode on it. In the meantime, we will be... Well, let's talk Patreon for just a second. If you're at our lowest tier, you get another movie every other month. If you're at our second tier, you get another movie every month on top of that. So that means in 2 months, you'll get 3 episodes. If you're at the $10 tier, you also get a movie riff 4 times a year. And, well, at the top level, you get to request a movie from us. There's only a handful of those left remaining, though. So, you know, if you want to do a movie that you request, you better get on it. Also, I want to thank you guys for all the rating and reviewing you're doing and the sharing. It makes a huge difference to us. So, thanks.
Welcome to Myopia Movies. This week, we watch Jennifer Garner Hulk out. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia Movies and Riff Raw Cinema Problem. What panel we have tonight?
Hello, this is Daniel, and as a 33-year-old, I just want to say I wish I was 30 and flirty and fabulous.
Nor Chernet, I'm currently 28, and when I watch this movie, I call bullshit because I wake up with aches and pains every day.
And I'm Christine, a.k.a. Fitzy, and Rick Springfield is still my boo.
There we go. So we watch this. It's almost a mind swap comedy, kind of, sort of. It's her flashing forward from a terrible 13, like teen party, from tween to teen, to suddenly flashing forward. I will give this movie something immediately. There's not a lot of futzing around.
What's up?
Boom, boom, boom. We are 30 in no time flat, which is exactly what my memory tells me once I started drinking.
How exactly did that happen, the flash forward? There was like some sort of fairy dust.
There was yes, she was given a... wish Barbie dust? Dream house that her friend, her best friend Matt made for her. And apparently some of the glitter, while she was in the closet waiting on her 7 minutes in heaven, she just wished, after getting dissed by all of the popular kids, that she could be 30 and flirty because she was an avid reader of the Poise magazine. And then once she started to make her wish, the magical, as in Wonder Woman 1984, that just poof of air. And her wish came true.
I had a stone.
You know,
there must have been some magic.
It was great. It was PCP. It was cocaine. It was dust. The dust was PCP.
Oh, yeah.
There's no way.
You could go on that trip. 1980 sparkle dust just landed.
I mean, it's the same way Donnie Darko worked. But
that's
anyway,
right.
Do you know how I know this was a fantasy concocted by drugs? Is that a magazine in the 80s was something she could work for in the 2000s
exactly.
And still for a Manhattan apartment?
Yes.
The end of this movie would have happened anyway. She would have been unemployed in a suburb somewhere.
True.
Did you ever know someone who was obsessed with fashion magazines? I had a girl I dated in college who called Cosmo the Bible, and just like, oh, she's never going to have a regular relationship. So we dated for a few months.
Might as well be me.
That's right. I am damaged goods.
That was more of a teen beat kind of gal.
Sure.
When I was 13, it was teen beat. It was not Cosmo. It was not.
So who was the teen beat? Who was the guy?
Well, I don't want to date myself.
Oh, please. Fine.
It was Leif Garrett and Sean Cassidy.
Ooh.
Oh, there you go.
And Andy Gibb.
Like the Bee Gees?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That documentary really hit home for me.
I mean, not that I have dignity. My crush was like Pamela Anderson or something. Like, which again, that is exactly how old I am. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And also, you look back, you're just like, oh no. Like, she's an inflatable Barbie girl. Like, it's there's nothing else there. But that's what the era of the supermodel was, which is kind of weird that you lean into it here. But, like, you knew, like, supermodels by their name. They were on the front pages of everything. And this is a fashion magazine thing. Which again, it tells me, at least in the back of my head, this movie was written in 1997 and then came out in 'cause like that's what it feels like. It's like the weird era of high fashion. Like, this isn't The Devil Wears Prada. This is like completely assuming we all know that. So to me, that says late 90s much more than now.
Well, this movie is basically what 2004 would have been imagined as an adolescent in 1987. It's like it just continued, but Aaron was so obsessed with magazines and fashion and music and... That's just not how it's laid out.
Let's go back. Let's remember when we were all 13. What did we expect? Like, I imagine myself going towards college and things I want to do. But were we all thinking about 30s and things like that, or our dream jobs? Like, what was everyone's dream job?
No. I was and maybe this is different between genders. But like at 13, I was totally convinced I was a dude. And all of my dreams are about having sex with people. Right. So it was all, like, again, this dream doesn't really work. And that's why, they've done this before with, guys. And it's weird. Like, you end up, I'm Matthew Perry now. Like, no one wants to be Matthew Perry.
No. I mean, basically, at 13, I was the young version of Mark Ruffalo in this movie. And I...
Frank, we developed some kind of really charming hobbies.
Charming hobbies. There's a bunch of quotations.
Do you have a Casio
around that?
Do you have a Casio piano or something? God, no.
Or a Moog? Are you a Moog guy?
I was a tuba player.
Anyway. Oh, dude, I played saxophone. We probably would not have been friends.
No problem.
It's brass and woodwinds. They're just like ducks in water.
There you go. There's
beef like that between the instruments?
Well, we just have friends, and unfortunately, people who play brass aren't on them.
Okay.
Those goddamn woodwind players, they're just the biggest idiots on the planet. It's what can I say?
Crips and Bloods, okay.
God, can you imagine a marching band movie with Crips and Bloods and just the percussionists are just on the side like, call me in, coach!
Come on. You in my section, come!
Anyway. I mean, we don't have to do a plot synopsis here. One of you can try it, but it's just like, she's 13.
You know what?
She wishes she was an adult.
I think Finn should try it. I mean, the entire time watching this, I just feel like she related to it the most.
I mean,
and yes, pay attention.
I live this movie.
You turned 30 one day?
I did. I feel like it.
It was yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, it's just this, it's the weird Freaky Friday, some kind of deus ex machina, and she's all of a sudden 30 and working for the fashion magazine that she was reading when she was 13.
Right.
And she was apparently an alcoholic slut.
Mm.
And her first, she wakes up to a naked man in her bed at 30, which I didn't, but you know, that's okay. And so
this,
she.
This beefcake, talk about that later. This Canadian hockey playing beefcake
for the New York Rangers.
Yes. Who was a big man child, so I could kind of see where that relationship's going. But she ends up working at the fashion magazine, and her frenemy from when she was 13 is her coworker. And the two of them are working for Gollum. And
Andy Serkis isn't taking
Andy Serkis, not in a mocap outfit.
Snoke.
Martin Hammett from 24 Hour Party People. That's my point of reference.
Yes. And they are battling another magazine in town. And apparently there's a mole at their magazine that is sharing secrets.
One too many plot points.
Yes,
there's so much going on here.
You see a co-op? Sorry, that's the only thing. But obviously when there's a mole, I think of like The Departed.
And you know what? If you have one movie reference, it's a pretty good one to have.
Yeah.
Well, what happens, Fitz, do you mind if I cut in?
Dude, there's nothing to cut into. This movie is just liquid.
It's
piggy.
There's not even 10 seconds.
You're picking up a fistful of sand, and the only shell is Mark Ruffalo. Like, that's the only thing you need to hold on to for 4 seconds.
It's a 13-year-old in 1987 who reads some story from Poise about how 30 is the best year of a woman's life, and then...
And then she has to get married and, like, pop out children or whatever.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Then vote for Reagan again.
That's the American dream. But anyway...
It's pretty good.
Anyway, during her birthday party, everyone, like, abandons her. She tries to invite the popular kids over, not just the, like, Heathers or Mean Girls gang, but, like, the big jocks that she's got a crush on.
The feathered hair boys.
Yes, yes,
that
dude.
That pull up in their trans.
You pointed out Brie Larson was in that group, wasn't
it? Brie Larson is the littlest Larson.
A very young Brie Larson is in that group. But anyway, after that, she makes some wish after her friend gives her the dollhouse, like you said, and the sparkles come down, where she wants to be 30 years old, and she's transported into a time where she is 30 and already has a successful career. She's got a giant Manhattan apartment, and she's dating a New York Ranger, and she's no idea what's going on. So she's trying to figure it out, like how she got there and fix her adult life.
Kinda. For the first half, she's figuring out her adult life and having a lady boner for Mark Ruffalo. By the way, I get it. He's a handsome man here. But it's just very bizarre how this whole
thing is super skinny in this. Like,
he's
oh
not
my God.
Hulking out yet.
No,
I mean,
he's not.
They all talk about how Chris Evans hulked out, like, you know, all them pecs. But Mark Ruffalo had to read.
Apparently.
So I got nothing. I like Mark Ruffalo and everything he does. I recently watched Zodiac for the first time, and I was like, my goodness.
Well, there was a point where, like, Mark Ruffalo was that it guy, the honky,
Benedict
whatever.
Cumberbatch, and then we killed him and ate him.
I don't think there was ever a time where he was the it guy. I think there was, like, he had a lot of nerd cred where, like, you know... everyone at a comic convention.
He's the classy ass version of Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, basically.
True. If this was made a little bit, if Big Bang Theory was probably made in the early 2000s, I think he could have been a part of it. Or in the late 90s, something like that.
He absolutely would have been a part of it.
He would have been a freak and or geek.
True.
You guys are looking at me. We're fine. No. Anything you want to talk about in particular with this movie?
Yes.
I mean, we gotta go through the plot, of course, but, like, this movie, other than, like, the weird 1980s at the beginning, is just kind of a goings-on. Like, she figures this stuff out, it's an alien landing on Earth, like, it's the role Brendan Fraser played 7 times, like, what's a TV? And then he turns on the TV, like, that's kind of half this.
Yes, there's something I'd like to ask. I saw this in theaters back in the day.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Were you a big Garner head?
Oh, big time. Ooh. I mean, that was the Alias. I would watch that multiple times a week. Actually...
Have dignity, sir.
The truth of the matter is, there was basically the girl next door, and I would occasionally go to see movies together, so sure. This was one of them.
This is 2003?
2004.
I saw this with regular panelist, I believe, Lauren Cannell. Same
oh,
way.
There you go. Yeah. And I was just wondering if anybody else had seen this back when it came out.
I didn't.
I saw this on a Windows 98 computer when VCR, the DVD got introduced to the PC.
Ooh. It probably lagged just as much as when we watched it.
Probably
right now.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then
thanks HBO Max.
I was a preteen, whatever. And I was actually obsessed with Jennifer Garner, particularly in those scenes where, you know, she realized, you know, it was a big plot point. She kind of stuffed herself when she was 12 and stuff. And then she's like, boom, I have boobs, you know, that kind of thing. And I guess I remember being a little kid obsessed with that.
Her boobs really filled the dress out.
Yes, yeah,
sure they did.
Her line, not mine.
Yep.
No, I wouldn't know who they wrote the script for, because some of these jokes feel like they're not
13-year-old boys.
That's true.
Yeah.
This is the era of Lara Croft Tomb Raider.
True.
Gross.
True.
I can see Halle Berry in this movie.
Say it again?
You can see her in this movie?
I could imagine they wrote it for her.
Okay, I can see that
too. I mean, it's possible. She probably produced this. I mean, the movie's fine. It just feels very... Well, I mean, this one has more joke-em-ups than the last Judy Greer movie we did.
It's true.
Wouldn't want.
True.
Well, the one thing I liked about this movie was the whole party scene, of course. You know,
Which one? There's a lot of party scenes.
The party scene.
Where they're doing Thriller?
When they're doing Thriller.
Oh, good lord. There's a scene where they're dancing Thriller in
this
movie.
It's crazy to me how people just turn into a flash mob.
When you, as an African-American male, watch this, do you just think, oh, white people? Because that's a pretty white person scene.
And I felt pressured when she was like, that scene where she was telling Mark Ruffalo to come on, let's dance. The other times I've been pressured, just like, come on, Lord, dance. And I'm like, I am not a dancing monkey. You can't tell me to do that.
Especially with the music that's going on at this fake 2003 prom.
It's like I had all these awkward situations growing up. Like, let's say I take a family road trip or a trip with a different family, primarily white. I went to an old white school. And then they'll put on, like, someone pop. And they're like, listen, look, Nora, we played a song for you. And I'm like,
dude, thanks. Play that funky music, white boy? My goodness.
There we go. That being said, Thriller was, I wasn't a child of the 80s and stuff. Was Thriller hot like that? Did everyone know the choreograph of Thriller?
Fitch would like know that more than I would.
Well, I'm of the age when that video debuted on MTV. Right. They played it like every hour on the hour. They played the documentary making of once a day. And I mean, everybody could do like snippets of the dance. Like,
right, with the whole arms.
Yeah,
the
creepy arms.
Right,
like,
right, right.
But I mean, we never memorized it.
Yeah.
This is a very specific, weird...
That's a better reference than I've got. I remember him... my introduction to him was the music video he had in front of Free Willy.
Oh, yes!
Hold me,
hold me, hold me, feel me. Wait, what?
Yeah. And the entire time I was wondering, who's that skinny white guy?
Basically.
I mean, and by the end... Go.
Oh, yeah, no,
please, no. Tell me a story, nerd.
No.
About Michael Jackson?
Anything.
I was obsessed with him until, you know, and then...
The troubles?
It's just like, yes. The troubles. Oh, no, here's the thing about Michael Jackson that it was. My mom was obsessed with him.
Like, now, I remember what era was mom obsessed with?
Every single one. Okay. Every single one.
Hold
up. Maybe until he went light skin.
Because, like, my mom... was like in high school in the 80s, so she has Thriller,
right?
But like, she first fell in love when she was younger listening to Jackson 5 stuff,
yeah.
And then, like, Michael at his height, I mean, he has a number one like twice a year for like a decade, but like that original Thriller, like, right. I'm just projecting back at you, my good man.
I don't know, like, even in his last case, before they added two cases,
before he died
and got 10 more cases somehow.
Right.
Like, I remember we watched that trial, and then
they
was like, not guilty, I got woken up to, like, cries and stuff, yes. And I'm just like, and then as I get older, I'm like,
dude,
what happened? She's like, Thriller, North Thriller. I'm like, okay, cool, thanks. It's just like,
I get it. The black kids in my elementary school had a very different reaction to O.J. Simpson.
With my mom, it was she would have been as old as that, but it was all about the Osmond family with Donnie.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, there you go.
But hold on, before we get to speaking of things that didn't age well in this movie,
O.J. Simpson.
Huh? No. There's a scene where she's like, you know, when she's 30 years old, she's looking in her office, and there's a picture of Rudy Giuliani.
She wanted to be right next to Papa Rudy
And if you're listening to this, so we're in the year 2021. Let me give you a recap of what's happened to Rudy. We found out he married his cousin.
He melted into his son.
He's about to go to jail.
He kind of, you know...
That's what you want to have your picture on the wall.
He kind of jacked himself off in front of Ball-Ass Daughter, if you've never seen movies, stuff.
But again, like, that puts it, like, without that scene, you're like, oh, this could be at any point. But, like, when Rudy has to be in every movie, like, that's 2002 to 2006. Like, that's a very specific time.
Was Anger Management the Adam Sandler movie where he actually showed up at the end?
It is. And you know, the only politician I've heard recently who was able to pull this off is Patrick Leahy, who's been in 5 Batman movies.
Oh, shit.
At one point, like, the one I picture is when the Joker, played by Heath Ledger, has a knife to his neck.
Yes.
And you're just like, At the moment, he's the president pro tem of the Senate, which means he's like third in line for the presidency, and he's been in 5 Batman movies, and I'm fine with that.
Personally, I believe he was also in Batman and Robin, and he was one of the bidders.
Yes, he was.
Yes.
He was. Again, 5 Batman movies, man.
It's been more Batman movies than Batman.
That's true. There's been no Batman in 5 Batman movies. Well done. Oh, hell.
All right.
You know who we haven't talked about in a while? Jennifer Garner or Judy Greer.
We've already done a movie with Jennifer Garner, and that was Daredevil, with her as Elektra.
That's fine, yeah. And you know what? This movie is better than that.
Yes! You know what? Yes. Yes, it is.
Depends who you talk to.
You don't like this better than Daredevil?
I mean, if you ask 12-year-old Noor, I would say Daredevil. But as the more... Not necessarily mature, nor... Okay, 13, go on.
I am softy for something like this, because I like Jennifer Garner, I like Mark Ruff, I like everyone in this movie, pretty much. Like, Andy Serkis, like, I love seeing that beautiful man's face. Like, a little face?
Even with that awful goatee.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Facial hair situation.
Oh, God.
He looks like he's a cartoon character with a makeup, like... It's like, they drew thick lines around his face, like... It's as though someone wrote him a bad review that a play was in, and they just said, I wish he had a jawline, so he wore it in black makeup.
Do you remember that scene in Mulan where one
I'm
of them
make
is like...
I'm gonna make a man! Oh, sorry.
Where somehow some ink ends up in the tea, and then the character is like drawing around her face,
right.
And it looks like a thin goatee. That's Andy Serkis's facial hair in this movie.
I mean... You're right, but it's more basic than that. It's like the Muppets are going to a biker club.
Mm.
Like, this is painted on, like...
You mean what happened in the first Muppet movie?
Right!
Okay, everybody, drinks on the house!
Thank you, Gonzo. That's not a bad idea. But, you know, we should be talking about Jennifer Garner. Jennifer Garner and Judy Greer.
I mean, it makes sense. I think Mark Ruffalo, when...
the Ruffalo's child.
When she meets up with Mark Ruffalo, when she's realized how old she is and things, and she's trying to get more reattached to her past, she kind of goes through a rundown memory lane, thank you, of just, like, things. And we find out that she's kind of, like, been a dick ever since her... That birthday party that she skipped from 13 to 30 and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah,
There's a scene where she meets up with Mark Ruffalo and they go through old yearbooks.
Yeah, yeah. She found out the...
You realize she was popular.
She's popular. She had after that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which, I mean, I think Mean Girls got released the same year, right?
I think it did. I don't know. The same year. Oh, okay.
2004,
no.
I think.
Something like
that.
The whole high school kind of deal. I mean, what was... Did you go to your high school prom?
Yeah.
What was that like? Did you enjoy the moments and things? No? Did y'all try to get drunk? You know?
No, I wasn't
drinker in high school. I went to prom with a wonderful girl. We had a good time. And,
sister.
Fuck you, Nick.
No.
When I think about tomorrow, when I think about now. Sorry, thinking prom songs. What happened, Matt? Man, I'm just fucking with you, Danny boy. Just.
You know what happened? We ended up cuddling on my parents' couch together.
I have a weird story, though.
Sidebar, cool.
My prom, fine. I mean, I was like 17-year-old senior. I was dating a sophomore, but she was on the older end, so she was 16, something like that. It was one of those kinds of things. But senior prom, so unless she was invited by...
Yourself, yeah.
Yeah. Standard prom stuff. I wore a suit, a tux that was not fitting well, and a cummerbund that I'm embarrassed about. So we went home to my place. Hook up, it's high school prom, whatever. Her mom, coming to pick her up, got arrested for a DUI. So after, like, hanging out with her and, like, just, you know, it's high school. You're, like, everything is, like, weird and awkward and elbowy, and then you're just, like, hanging out watching TV, and it's all of a sudden, like, 1 in the morning, and then her dad shows up, and it's just like, get a weird text at like 3 in the morning. My mom has been arrested.
Jerry.
Don't worry, she doesn't listen. Trust me. That's the relationship.
I'll do you one better. It was my senior prom. I went with a girl that was very religious in the sense of that she was trying to rebel from her Muslim parents.
Okay. Oh,
boy. And so it was kind of weird when she told me to pick her up from Sears instead of her house.
I've got a little minute there.
Yeah. And then because she didn't want if you know how the culture is, it's like that. And so I remember coming in and stuff. She was getting hair and makeup done in the car, and she comes out wearing this salmon dress. Apparently, she's wearing a see-through dress, and I'm not the only person that couldn't see it. Anyways, cut to that night. We had a campfire, and you know, I thought this was going to be the night, but it didn't happen like the way it was. We had it all over in tent. She ended up sleeping in a different person's truck while I slept in my tent by myself. My best friend at the time, he's still my best friend, Alex. He came and he was like, "Hey, man, I'm going to crash with you." And I'm like, "Thanks, buddy." And yeah, and that was my senior prom.
Well, it's amazing that we're talking about that because that's kind of what this movie is. It's an imaginary fantasy about when you're a teen, mm-hmm. what adulthood is like.
Yeah.
And it's good at that.
It is good at that.
I mean, like, she orders a drink she clearly heard in a movie. She's ordering, a snowball version of, like, a...
she got a piña colada. That was her first...
Because she likes getting caught in the rain.
Exactly.
But,
mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the first time I drank, we were in England on a school trip, and it was a bunch of 16-year-olds, and none of us had drank before. So we get to this bar in England, and we all don't know what.
Sure.
I'm like, I got a Blue Hawaiian in England.
Oh, boy.
And then my friend got a Brandy Alexander.
No
it's
kidding.
It's just things we had heard other people drinking. So, I mean, that pina colada reference, like, that hit me. I was like,
no,
that's exactly
that's
what
a perfect joke. It is. It's like... Unless you're the kid who goes up and just goes, give me a pint of lager and then they get punched. But, like, beer's easy. When you're trying to order, like, adult drinks, you're just like, that's why, like, I was telling you, like, when you have that, like 21-year-old in college and he's like, what do you guys want to drink? Everyone was getting, like, beer and vodka. I'm like, can I get a bottle of Kahlua?
Ooh,
and,
well,
like,
there you
I'm
go.
Like, I'm the one who's like, I'm going to make a white Russian because I'm classy like that. And you're just like... Who the fuck are you? I just want a beast light and some crackers. Like, I'm gonna get hungover immediately.
And I assume the white Russian was in reference. He said it to the Big Lebowski.
The Big Lebowski, oh, yeah. Yes, sir. A Caucasian, my friend. I don't have vodka right now for drinking reasons, but otherwise I'd be making them right. I made my own Kahlua one year. Like,
what was
that? I've got two things to say. First and foremost, do you know what the white trash Russian is?
No.
You mix when you're drinking vodka together.
Oh.
Oh god, I feel queasy just thinking about that. Like, I need an Alka-Seltzer.
Yeah.
Like, that's something.
Second, I hated this movie when I saw it originally.
And now?
Back in theaters. And now, you know, it's like, it resonates with me a little more. Don't know why, but I still don't think it's good, but...
I
think
so,
it's cute.
Well, yeah, so, I think Fitz had a great statement just there. I think it's cute.
No, I mean, first of all, Fitz is 100% right. Like, it's not when I usually say this movie is charming. This is a cute movie. Like, that's what this is.
It is.
My thought secondarily is, where does this play out in her head? Is it a dream? Is this a fantasy? Is this she goes to the future and comes back? Because, like, to me, it's like, oh, she had a concussion, and then she realizes that the one she really wants is the nerd who's going to make out with her at the end of the scene.
Does it matter?
Yes, because I think she died. No, I mean,
she did hit herself on the head, and that could have collapsed her, and she could have got brain damage.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my favorite joke about this whole thing, when we get to it, eventually she goes to her parents' house in Jersey or wherever they are. And she goes into that room, and now it's filled with anything that doesn't have to do with kids. It's like tents. Like, the second
the
she left.
With all the crap on it because it's not being used.
Yeah,
any
the second she leaves
ever.
The house, they become cool parents, which is awesome.
Which to be fair, they have her growth chart on the back of that one closet door where it's like, oh, she's 10. This is how tall she is.
Well, and it's a good parent move because the second they move out, you just close the fucking closet. It's as though they never had kids, which is something. That's why usually in like a door frame, so everyone sees it all the time. Not on the back side of the door that you close most of the time.
That's true.
These are parents who I don't think like her, which is why she turns out to be an asshole like the world's most charming woman, Judy Greer. It's so weird that like Judy Greer is the snarky
she's
asshole
the heavy.
And everything. I imagine she's a very nice human being.
I don't think that's the case that the parents hated her. I think it was just how would she adjust to her peers?
They just probably wanted to get out so they can smoke weed all the time.
I mean,
of the 80s. And, I mean,
daughter's a loser. What if we went on vacation all the time?
That's probably the whole communication blotch that apparently, because she was like, that she had between her parents or so. You know? But
the best movie about high school relationships is Heathers.
Dazed and Confused. Porky's. Revenge of the Nerds.
Not Porky's, not Revenge of the Nerds.
Superbad.
It's Superbad's pretty good, but I'm still gonna say Heathers.
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
But hold on, let's talk about how much of an asshole Jennifer Garner's character was before she came
into.
Yes.
I love how she doesn't recognize her.
Right. Well, not even that, just like the whole shit that's going on with her plot. And yes, didn't recognize her and that kind of thing. But I think she's like cheating on, having a two-time the whole situation in the office, and then she
terrorizes her assistant.
She's a mole.
That is a unique, great piece of this movie. Is that again? It's not like Big, where he just becomes an adult. They flash forward her into her later life, and her adult self is a monster.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she grew up to be a Karen or something?
Basically, she's just a terrible human being.
And even her, as a 13-year-old in a 30-year-old body, she's a homewrecker too.
Dude, she is macking on, I mean, albeit a pretty fucking good-looking Mark Ruffalo.
Right.
But like, he has a fiance who looks shockingly like her. Like, this is Jennifer Garner's stunt double. made for TV, Jennifer Garner is pretty good looking. And she's like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make it like she never was born. Because when she goes back to the past, there might be a girl down the street that she just hits with a car.
She thought
we don't know. Maybe she, like, maybe
this isn't Donnie Darko. This is 13 going on 30.
Whoa. We don't know how they hook back up. Maybe they hooked back up at her funeral, and it was really sexy. I mean, we've all been there at a sexy funeral.
No.
Islam funerals, are men and women are separated, so...
You find the humor in things. But no, she gets... No, even towards the end of the beginning of this movie, she gets what she wants.
The end of the beginning?
The beginning of the end? The start to finish?
That is a great Smashing Pumpkins song right there.
I didn't know what it was. I'm sorry.
He's never heard of Smashing Pumpkins other than the street tragedy.
Mm. True.
Anyway. I mean, as far as what this movie we need to talk about, like, there's not a lot of the... Like, the plot is exactly what we talked about. She's learning how to be an adult, kind of.
Well, she flashes forward into her life, which is apparently her as a magazine editor for Poise.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much it. Andy Serkis is her boss.
Judy Greer is her equivalent, but also kind of nemesis.
Mm-hmm. And she's had a nose job.
Yes.
Which everyone comments on. And I thought the point was that you just look better and no one notices. Like holy shit, look at that scar. Mm. You know, your boobs look great, but you can see where they cut in. Like, I don't know. It's very bizarre that they're pointing out the fact that, holy shit, you got a nose job. Even Mark Ruffalo's like, man, that you'd think they'd do a better job sewing that up. Like,
Well... You're right, Nick. There's a lot of weirdness about her age in this movie, but she's apparently dating a New York Ranger. She tries to look up her crush in middle school.
And then she does try to hit on a 13-year-old in a cafe.
Yes, she does. That's later in the movie, but that totally happens.
What did you say when that happened, Nick? It was very...
Woody Allen.
It was the Woody Allen scene. But also, it's just that she's like hitting on a 15-year-old, too. Like, it's like, oh, he's the older boy, and it feels very off.
I mean, you get
Nick,
it.
Nick, why are you judging me? I'm just trying to express myself the best I can, and oh geez, Nick, Nick, you shouldn't judge me. I mean, the heart.
You need 20% more message.
No,
I understand what you're doing. I'm trying to do the best I can,
but
oh, God help me.
I've won Oscars, Nick.
You have the one.
I will say this: yeah. Jennifer Garner trying to be a 13-year-old. It's good acting in a way. I mean,
it's a silly movie. Like, I almost wish this was 20% sillier.
Yeah.
Because it's good, it's fine, but like, she, like, other than breaking up a marriage, which is weird.
But she does befriend the little 13-year-old girl that's in her building, and then they have a slumber party with all
that's
her friends.
That's a cute scene.
Oh, that's...
That might be the most effective scene, in fact.
That is a weird scene. I don't know. I mean, if you think that's effective, great, but I thought that was just totally weird.
I wish that was earlier, though. Because
yeah, it should have been in line when she hit on the kid in the diner and then had the slumber party, because it would have still been her being really 13.
And she's trying to grow up, and she's, like, talking about being bigger halfway through that. Like, you know, I feel like I'm an adult now. Well, dude, like, there's more jokes almost you could do with that.
Yeah.
Like, you almost could make the girl her partner.
Yeah.
And, like, shoving her in.
Like the kid
saying,
in Big, that was Tom Hanks' best friend.
Right. But like, and that's what it would be. Like, she goes into a Starbucks, and, like, she's excited just to have coffee because she's 13.
Yeah.
And instead, like, the guy's hitting on her, and her friend kind of, you know, gives her the shove. And, like, that's a relationship. So we learned what it's like to flirt as opposed to just dating this underwear model who pretends he can play a sport. Walking around in a towel.
The second act of this movie is basically, you know, Jennifer Garner figuring out, oh, hey, I'm an adult. I have boobs, which gets referenced multiple times. But beyond that, there's this whole thing about how her character is just monstrously evil.
Dude, that's... And it's also weird because we see very few after effects. It would have been more compelling if Ruffalo's character had already been fired by her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or, like, somehow sexually embarrassed by her. But otherwise, like, it's like every other middle school relationship where you drift apart. And if you come back together in, like, your adult years, you're like, we have literally nothing to talk about. Hey, you open a brewery. Maybe I'll find you attractive. Like...
Yep.
It's so weird and distant. Like, I'm showing up at my friend's house, and you're just...
Okay. There's a reason I didn't go to my 10th high school reunion, which is, fuck all of you.
That's coming up. We're trying to. 2020.
That's coming up.
I mean, it's coming up, and I've been a part of the planning, but I'm
you
just like...
You and I will have to talk about this.
Well, Ner, I've got something to say to you about that.
So Fitzy doesn't know this, and Daniel will edit this out, but he is a former student of mine.
Okay.
As I am.
Which is funny.
When we talk about our past, is it good?
No, it's funny because in 2021, now that I've been teaching for 15 years.
We've known each other for almost...
Forever. And you're not that much younger than me.
No,
as an adult,
no.
I'm 5 years older than you or something
right.
like that.
Yeah.
And that doesn't matter. But when my first teaching year, I was 22, and I was teaching 18, and there was a girl I taught named Camille who was dating a 23-year-old. But she was 18, and so, like, it's not a big deal. But at the same time, she's dating someone older than her teacher.
Crazy.
That kind Which of ties time. Back to this movie.
This movie.
Well, I mean, there's this whole thing about how Poise is out of date. We mentioned how they do Thriller dance, I think. Which is a fun scene.
It's nostalgic and stuff. Yeah.
Which, frankly, when I first saw that, I didn't know what that was. But because that's not just a famous dance that everybody can do, you know? Mm-hmm. But I mean, after that, there's this big twist. There's this big twist where Judy Greer and Jennifer Garner are trying to, like, redesign Poise.
Yes.
Because they're getting the R word.
Right.
Redesign.
And anyway, they just need to figure out how to modernize the magazine, and that's the third act, basically.
Judy Greer goes in a very hot topic.
Yes. Fashion suicide.
Yes.
No, that's not.
And Jennifer Garner recreates her high school yearbook, which I don't understand to this day. Like, she uses it as an excuse to hire Matt Markopoulos, yeah, who happens to be a photographer, and they take a bunch of high school yearbook type photos, which I can't focus. Like, when they showed them in the presentation, I'm like, where's the fashion?
But
it just seemed like they were neat pictures, but they weren't anything that you would see in a fashion magazine.
That would catch my eye more than any suicide sheet thing.
You're supposed to sell something.
That's exactly it. Like, you're not, you don't want to look at high school pictures. And for somebody who did not have a good time in high school, which would be me, I don't want to look back at my high school years. I don't want to see that in a fashion magazine. I'm sure lots of people did, just not me.
No, I didn't. I mean, I did and I didn't. I had moments, you know.
I don't hate it. I also teach high school now. So either that or maybe I just have, like, there's a block somewhere in my brain.
It's kind of the deal.
The last year and a half might be fun, but nah.
I mean, it is what it is. I mean, the thing here, though, is it's worse than that because this is middle school. I mean, like, having a good or bad high school experience, it all depends, like, was I hooking up with someone that week? My hormones are high, and I can, oh, wait, there's this one teacher I enjoy. Middle school, I think everyone universally hates. That's why there's one people I respect in this world more than just a regular teacher. It's a middle school teacher, man. Like, anyone could just wake up and be like, I'm going to finger paint today, because I get that. But middle school is just, like, hormones and evil, and the girls are, like, so much advanced over the guys that they're trying to find someone to hook up with, and the guys are just, like, throwing rocks at each other. Like, it's the worst. Middle school's the worst.
We did throw rocks.
Dude, and I was like, you know, guys, you know what'd be great if we could just be friends? And play Magic the Gathering.
Bonk, bonk on head. That means you like me, right? Dude. Oh, jeez.
And again, I had a weird experience where someone I knew in, like, whatever, literally in middle school, was, like, having her birthday, and I said, happy birthday. And she goes, dude, I had, like, the biggest crush on you in middle school. I'm like, A, you must be drunk, because no one remembers that shit. But B, who cares? It was 24 years ago. Like, I don't remember anyone from middle school who I didn't also know later on.
Well,
they could have peaked in middle school.
So many people I know did.
In middle school? Then you just did that for high school.
But I have friends who are also better than those people.
Part of the darkness of this movie.
The introduction of the metric system. That fucker.
Indeed. Part of the darkness is Jenna figuring out just how much of a terrible person her adult self is.
Mm-hmm. Knowing Judy Greer apparently does that to people in movies. I don't know. She seems very charming.
You're not my supervisor!
Oh, man. She just needs to be in everything. But I mean, are there any scenes we should talk about? We should talk about the Thriller scene for half a second.
Mm-hmm. We kind of did, I mean.
Well, right, just, but, like, I do want to emphasize the fact that she has never dressed like an adult before. This is when she meets her friend who becomes the middle school friend in the elevator.
Yeah.
Right? And we enter, like, a scene from, this is, like, early 2000s. This is late Pierce Brosnan nonsense Bond. So, like, there really were raves. It doesn't feel right.
This was, I think, a year after Michael Jackson had been arrested.
So we need him in everything. Because he's a good guy. And my boss, Weinstein, said that there's no sexual crime you can be convicted for.
Harvey!
What joke am I? That's a joke about. Because no, Weinstein is in prison now.
That's ignorant, Mitch. You're being ignorant.
God help me.
They took Captain EO off of Epcot for sex reasons. People got too aroused on that.
Apparently so.
I used to work there.
Whoa, back up. What were you on Captain EO? Were you one of the Muppets?
No, I handed out the glasses.
No?
And I did a little spiel before the movie.
I threw up on Captain EO.
I knew that. We said about Thriller and knowing the choreography. I knew all the choreography of Captain EO because I saw that movie like 5,000 times.
It's not bad.
It's I'm gonna actually YouTube movie.
That. I'm actually gonna watch that tonight.
Have you never seen it before?
No, I lived.
You lived. You lived Captain EO. No.
2010. Came back to
it did.
Disney.
That's, yep. I saw it
and
again.
And
then
that's
too,
when yeah. I saw it. And then I was just like, I remember because I remember when I was a kid. Because when I was a kid, 3D apps were up. I don't know who cleaned it. Anyway, sorry for whatever. And then I'm actually just gonna go tonight and just YouTube it because I'm feeling nostalgic.
Dude, so before we went to Disney the first time, me and my daughter, I'm gonna keep interrupting Daniel. We would watch rides that we were not sure if she's okay with, so she could tell us that they were spooky or scary. And spooky was scary but fun.
Yeah.
So we did like Pirates of the Caribbean and like the Haunted Mansion.
Mm-hmm.
Just dude, I want to go back to Disney so bad. And I know, I would love to, if we ever could do it together, Fitzy, we should give you a mic and you should give us like an audio tour as though it's like Lake Wobegon and you're telling us your tales.
Oh, God. Like, so many Disney stories.
Right?
And that's why I want to... coming off so much.
one day, I'll like the show will just be called like something with Christina. Christine, excuse me. I'll make you a cocktail and you pick a story. And we just tell the story because, like, you have the best stories about this.
Well, I want to hear a story if that's cool. Is it all right?
She worked the circuit, man. She's the best.
She's the hit. Okay. All right.
I have a very, like, as Wayne said in Wayne's World, I have a lot of hair nuts and name tags.
Okay.
What was that's the game you play? Like, I was just thinking, like, talking to her about this. My, like, jobs, my first real, like, hourly wage nonsense jobs, movie theater concession stand guy.
Which I also did.
When I was in college, I worked in the library. I worked at a Brookstone. Like, I worked at a restaurant, and I cut fucking a corner off my thumb. But, like, just boring jobs. Like, I have stories here and there. And then listening to her talk about shit, like, you're the most interesting person.
In other words, Nick wasn't Andy Serkis in this movie.
No.
He wasn't the chief executive officer of Poise Magazine.
Of anything. Yeah.
He was also not gay, so. Because they had to shoehorn that in at the end. Andy Serkis was gay.
Weird.
He never said it, though. He just laughed uncomfortably about it.
But here's the thing. Why did he never hit on Jennifer Garner? Maybe he's gay. No, dude. I work with women that I don't have to hit on. Like, you don't have to explain it by the fact that he's gay.
It was such a throwaway, and it was so unnecessary. And I may be a little more sensitive to it than other people, but I just, that always bothers me.
No, it sticks out like a sore thumb, because he goes, wait a minute. And he just smiles this big toothy grin.
Yeah.
There's this thing at the tail end of the second act where... first and foremost, Mark Ruffalo's got a fiancé in this movie. A fiancé? Who's completely hot, by the way, but anyway.
Gorgeous. Which is weird because she has a line. We only bring it up because Jennifer Garner steals him away by murdering her in the past, I guess.
I guess, but...
Back to the Future, her.
The way the movie works is she shows up at his wedding and he's like, she tries to confess her love and he's not quite dressed in his tux yet, like the bow tie hasn't been tied, but...
Oh, God.
After
don't
that,
you hate it
he
when
gives,
the guy's...
he gives the dollhouse back to her and That's when we get the end.
Where he makes out with her on the floor.
Yes. Well, she makes out with him on the floor.
And he has an erection like a 13-year-old, and it ruins everything.
Constantly, yeah.
Is that glitter magic, then? Glitter makes everything. More of that 80s glitter magic.
Right.
Glitter magic is personally my favorite new wave band. I'm just going to say, I love glitter magic.
Keeps my economy going, so...
They released three albums back in the day. Oh, man. All of them are great.
Their Unplugged on MTV was a disaster.
Mm. Daft Punk covers them now.
So, I mean, this movie. You guys ready to wrap it up? Is there anything you want to talk about? We didn't touch on
it. Well, the soundtrack's kind of great.
It was great, but it was...
out of sorts.
Yeah, it was 1987, and they were playing Rick Springfield, which I will never complain about seeing Rick Springfield in a movie.
Sure.
Mm.
But, and, like, making references to Wang Chung, and, like, 1987 was more, like, Crowded House, and, like, other things were coming out then, and it just seems like they could have, in Belinda Carlisle's solo career, and, like, they missed an opportunity to kind of, and, like, I don't even, like, I think by 1987, we all didn't think Michael Jackson was cool anymore.
What I was going to make to reference to you is something I brought up earlier, which it feels to me like this movie should be older than it is, right? Like, because if instead she was in middle school or whatever this starts at, in like 82, it almost feels like it's more appropriate because a lot of the stuff is goofy-ish, but then they hired Garner, so maybe it felt like they switched things forward almost.
I could see that. Yeah, I could definitely see that. Because Rick Springfield was big when I was in seventh grade, when I was in middle school. And that was in 1982. So, I mean, I can see where...
Right. Like, it feels like... Because they're just...
And magazines were more... I mean, like, Grant, I said I was a Teen Beat girl, but, like, the fashion magazines were... Those kind of magazines were a lot more popular earlier.
Well, I made
on.
The joke about Cosmo, but, like, I'm sure it's, like, top rotation with, like, 2000, maybe. Right? Like,
but I guess, like... Wasn't that magazine Sassy still around in 19...
Yes.
You know, so that was kind of that.
Well, again, there's Teen Beat and Tiger Beat and all that stuff, too, which is... Like, there's supposed to be a chunk above, but, like, if anything, like, this is almost, like, the ultimate, like, boomer piece, because they're like, well, what if we made it a yearbook
thing?
Yeah,
they just kind of jammed it all in. It's like... Nostalgia, here it is, and just kind of threw out all the like common.
Threw it out.
It's 80s nostalgia. Let's just throw in Thriller, and let's just kind of just. Nobody's gonna remember what year it is. I mean, I'm a little more sensitive to it, just because.
But it would almost have been funnier if instead of the yearbook at the end, it was a retro at the end. Like she won the contract by doing like 80s retro with like popped collar with a popped collar and like.
That makes more sense for a fashion magazine.
Frankly, and it makes more sense for this specific movie where it's all about photography, too.
Frankly, the ending's great, where Mark Ruffalo and Jennifer Garner end up together.
In the pink house
In the pink
built.
House.
Yeah. You know,
I will
cute.
Say, though, it did feel like 20% more like Pee Wee Herman than I expected. But it's not that it's not cute. It's just that, like... Remember how I almost murdered everyone and then a horrifying, like, suicide ring thing I did? Oh, wait. Mark Ruffalo in my house? And, by the way, I'm sorry. If you have an ex-girlfriend, which, fine, and you invite her to the wedding, which is already a red flag, you don't say, remember that thing you gave me at your 13th birthday 17 years ago? Right? Like... You're allowed to have a high school girlfriend you or boyfriend that you have dreams about. But when you're twice the age you had fantasies about them, you let it go.
Yeah.
There's a lot behind this, which again works because it's Jennifer Garner and she's a charming woman. It works like completely different if it's a horny dude with a pot belly.
Yeah.
Like... This is not a role for Jason Alexander in 2002 or whenever they filmed this.
Shallow Hal, I think Jason Alexander was in that, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Or Jack Black. Jack Black is like, I loved you in middle school.
Oh, that would have been great if he was some Mark Ruffalo character. Jack Black.
He's just playing guitar.
This is 2003, man. Him.
The younger actor looked like a young Jack Black, more so than a young Mark Ruffalo.
And to be fair, if you wanted to make it more sexually vague, you could also do a Cusack of one sort or another. But you're right, Fitzy. A young Jack Black here? This is almost School of Rock era. Mm-hmm. Like, he could have done this and he could have been quite charming.
Oh, and we just have to mention that the man of her dreams in middle school turned out to be Jim Gaffigan.
That was hilarious.
Oh, dude.
Oh, yes.
That's a great joke. Because, again, like, I went to a school where my high school football team won state championships. I'm sure those guys had them national championship vibes. And by the by, one of them did it. He's now the head coach of the Rams, Sean McVay.
You know, you went to the same high school as Sean McVay?
High school, and then he followed me to college.
No shit!
And he remembers me, so that's a nice guy.
Oh, man, okay.
So, I'll tell you about it later, but, like, that's what it feels like. You're just like, I'm the cool guy, you know? And again, a couple of them made the college circuit and the university and then the pro circuit, but most high school guys, I'm like, I'm gonna be in the baseball team, you know, girl. Jim Gaffigan is the perfect, like, he's just, because he has that football body. And don't worry, I never played sports, but I have that football body for, you know, for reasons. And now I'm on medication.
I have the retired football body.
Great offensive lineman body there, Nick.
I've never been flirted with so hard on the show before. But yeah, guys, so, I mean, and then he becomes the prom queen?
Indeed, he does become prom queen.
I will say this about the movie in general. I think this came out 2 years after Sweet Home Alabama. Which, like,
sure.
So I feel like they were trying to grab an audience from that. You know, a girl being nostalgic from her past, finding someone from her past and trying to fall in love with him, and then finding out it can't really happen like that, and at the end they come up together. I think generally they were trying to recreate that rom-com feel to it.
Thank you, buddy.
Yeah.
Fitzy?
Well, let me preface this with I hate rom-coms with a passion, and I actually like this one.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it in a while, but I remembered it, and I think it's charming. It's cute, and the 80s thing obviously is going to be appealing to me, but I think it's a real fun movie. I think it's something I would definitely watch again.
Sure.
This will be weird for this podcast. When I first saw it, I hated it, but seeing it again now, frankly, I liked it a lot better because I'm in my 30s. So it's like, you know, being a teenager and just wondering what adulthood would be like, it's kind of fun to think about just what I thought it would be and what it actually is. And this movie does kind of capture it, so.
Yeah, I mean, I will say I like this more than I thought. And I think Sudsy pitched it, and I was like, fine, we'll have a rom-com, blah. This was fun. I enjoyed it. I mean, and to lead into Pitsy's comments, I don't know what I expected. This is the first time I had seen it, but, like, it's fun. It's light. It's easy. Like, there are other people you could have put in this that could have given it more of an edge, but they didn't. Like, Garner plays it very soft. It's all very soft across the board. So I'd recommend it. It's fun. Yeah. I don't know if you want anything with an edge. It's also not terribly hilarious. But I feel like it's a light afternoon watch. Like, this is like a TNT, you'd stay through the commercials kind of a watch.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's not even a hangover watch because sometimes you feel like you need to pay more attention. But, like, no, this is just a regular Sunday after brunch. You want to half take a nap on the couch. Like, I love it. It's fun. I'd watch this one again. In the meantime, we're out of time. So I'm going to say thanks for listening. Thanks for following us on Facebook, Twitter, Letterboxd. We get some good Letterboxd feedback. Also, write us a review. Someone said we look up too much online, so Daniel didn't edit us well enough. In the meantime, I will say, we're here and we have other shows. Listen to me on Required Reading. Fitzy and I occasionally do a live show on Cineprob, and if our host Larry's awake, we'll also do shows on for $5, which makes me seem cheap, but also it shows up on our Patreon feed. Nor has the Nerdcast, which I'm going to be on. Or he's
gonna. Why don't just look at me like that?
Or he's gonna just take over my show. Who cares? And at the end of the day, thanks for listening. Thanks for following. Thanks for reviewing us. And thanks for listening. We're out, guys.
Thank you.
Oh, dude. For 58 minutes, we.
Myopia Movies is a production of Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis. The theme song is Sherf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find his music on comtech.com. It is registered under the Creative 4 license. Our regular panelists are Matthew Flynn, Daniel Suttis, Nick Hoffman, and Jeremy Reigel. Thanks for listening. Please support our Patreon at patreon.com/myopia. Thanks, guys.